This land is yours. This land is mine. From California to New York, from the redwood forest and all stream water, this land was made for you.
And once again, hello everyone. You know me by Mr. Mojo, by my screen name. My name is Jonathan, and this week I'll be substituting for Basima Farah on The People Speak. This is a live audio program where we deal with guests from many organizations and fields of interest, all sharing their knowledge with our audience. And our audience can ask questions to our guests directly on the mic here in this virtual auditorium. And we will be, the broadcast emanates from PalTalk, which is the world's largest internet chat community. Please feel free to join us. You can tell your friends to download PalTalk at paltalk.com, install the software, check your settings, and join us. Our guest tonight is David Swanson. He's the co-founder of AfterDowningStreet.org, as well as many other organizations and career projects. And we are going to introduce ourselves to David Swanson, and we're going to be able to learn some things tonight that hopefully will be so riveting to the people in this room that you'll want to get up and take action to bring about a sense of justice in this country. So we're going to take one more short break, and when we come back, we'll introduce you to David Swanson, and we'll be right back.
Alfonso Palaez works two jobs to support his family. He also pays high rent in a neighborhood plagued with drugs and crime. The family needed to move to a safer place, so they applied for a Habitat for Humanity house. Now Habitat for Humanity is helping the Palaez family build a simple, decent, and safe home. A home they'll buy with a no-profit and zero-interest mortgage. Habitat for Humanity. Building homes, changing lives. Support the work in your community. Visit habitat.org.
Okay, we're back with you. We're going to jump right into this, David. And David is in the room. His nickname, he has a cam beside his name. He has his camera available if you want to take a look at Dave. If you have a blue or a green nick, the video quality should be very good. His nickname, of course, is DCNS1. He is in the room now, and I want him to just get right to it. The topics of this discussion right now are concurrent with the current events of this country that we have. Impeachment is the big word. The I word is getting a groundswell, and there is progress going on at local and state and federal levels. And the number one reason for this impeachment movement, the number one reason is this war in Iraq. So, David, if you're in the room, I'm going to go ahead and release the mic. Come on up. Tell us give us an update on what's going on now, an update on what states have taken the initiative and taken direct action as far as this impeachment movement goes. And you can take the mic right now. The mic is open.
Okay, I think I've got it on and locked. Put up your hand if I ramble on too long. But yeah, I would agree that the number one reason for impeachment is the war. It's the most serious international crime. It is the crime that is doing the most damage to this country and to the rest of the world. And it's the strongest case we can make for impeachment. And there are some who would argue otherwise, in that the illegal spying in violation of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is a crime that the president has openly admitted to, and that there's a precedent in an article about similar spying that went forward against Richard Nixon, whereas the article about Cambodia did not. But the evidence, starting with the Downing Street memo or Downing Street minutes, which we can talk about if you want, and including a huge accumulation of smoking gun after smoking gun at this point, is so overwhelming that Bush might as well have admitted to taking us to war based on lies and to an aggressive war that was not in any way in self-defense and that is a crime and is ongoing. That is the number one reason for impeachment. But if you want to get into the reasons, there's a laundry list, and there is torture, and there's detention without charge, and there's the production of phony news stories. There's the targeting of civilians in the war, and the use of depleted uranium and of white phosphorus as a weapon. There's the neglect with Katrina and with 9/11 that is criminal by any interpretation. And there's an endless list of abuses of power, of usurpation of powers that should belong to Congress or others by this president or unitary executive, as he likes to call himself. Let me jump in since I know you can't.
I want to back up to what you were saying there and ask of you. You mentioned that George W. Bush admitted to committing a crime. The spin that occurs and occurred when that is brought up, this admission of spying on Americans, it's being spun into oblivion without answering by Gonzalez and others, as if it is some sort of plenary executive power of a war president to go above and beyond any particular rule of law. And help me out here, because what they bring up in their spin is the Constitution. Can you point out constitutionally whether or not a president has this plenary power as the chief executive to do whatever he wants? Is it constitutional? And if you are going to bring a part of the impeachment process against him as admitting that he spied on Americans without a warrant, can you lay out for us some of the evidence that would compel the people to believe that he willingly broke the law as stated in this impeachment movement? Thank you.
Trying to haven't figured out the blocking it part yet. Ah, I got it. You know, the president did knowingly lie, knowingly deceive the American public on any number of issues, and we have a lot of the evidence of that collected on the left-hand side of the website afterdowningstreet.org. To start with the spying issue that you asked about, the Constitution does not allow, you know, it specifically forbids unreasonable search and seizure, but the Constitution does not include anything about the president's right to violate the law. And the president knew that, as evidenced by the fact that for a period of years he blatantly lied to the American public, saying, "I am not doing any spying without court approval." Of course he was. And when that was found out, he admitted to it and said, "It does not matter, I'm the president." And you know, I told a few Congress members about it, although they weren't allowed to say anything. And there is, of course, an effort in the Senate by the Republicans to legalize the president's actions after the fact. So this is the new version of a system of checks and balances. The executive branch violates the law. The legislative branch changes the law to accommodate. This is not what the Constitution was supposed to create and what the Constitution did a pretty good job of creating for the past 200 years. And this is exactly why impeachment is in the Constitution six times and was considered by the people who wrote the thing a primary central check on the judicial and executive branches by the legislative branch, which is made up of representatives of the people. Now, if you go to the other issues, there is abundant evidence that the president lied as well. And you can look at each weapon system that was alleged to exist in Iraq and the claims of ties to 9/11. And there is solid evidence that in each case, the president was informed, and informed in short documents that he could read, that the claims were not valid. And this is true of the aluminum tubes. This is true of the forged documents purporting to show that Saddam Hussein had tried to buy uranium from Niger. This is true of the Germans having informed us that their informant on the chemical weapons curveball was not reliable. This is true of the lack of any ties to 9/11, and so right down the line, we know that the president knowingly lied. And when we see these documents, like the Downing Street minutes, like the memo that came out more recently from a January 03 meeting at the White House, we see that what they were doing was in no way attempting to get solid evidence and in no way attempting to avoid a war, but attempting to create justifications for the war, including manipulating the intelligence about weapons and terrorism and going forward with a calculated scheme attempting to justify the war through the UN. Going to the UN was not an attempt to avoid war. It was an attempt to create an ultimatum that Saddam Hussein would refuse. And he accepted, and the inspectors went in, and they had to pull out so that we could bomb the country. But that was the plan. And so this idea that, well, the president meant well, he didn't know any better, is absolutely untenable at this point.
It always hearkens me to look back on the goings-on of the Project for a New American Century before 9/11. I think back to 1997. One of the original signatories of that group, of that think tank organization, was Jeb Bush. And the connection between Jeb Bush, Donald Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, and then you have Richard Perle, Armitage. It seems to me that the groundwork, the plan was, as far as this imperial, preemptive, aggressive nature that we suddenly found ourselves in, was preordained in the writings of the Project for New American Century. And it leads one to believe that the grooming of George Bush probably was in part carried on by the group known as the Project for a New American Century. And this new Pearl Harbor event, this 9/11 event, you can see how it's easy that they could spend that event and connect everything to it, even though they lie about it. You are absolutely correct. Another question I would like to ask is, obviously we have three branches of government at this point that are controlled by one party, and to officially, in the older channels, in the traditional channels, to carry out impeachment against a president begins in the House of Representatives. Now, I have read in the last couple of days, and could you fill us in on this Jefferson Manual, I think Section 603, I believe is what it is. Can you clarify that for me and tell me who discovered that particular process, whereas the states themselves, through the legislation of the state houses, can compel the House of Representatives in Washington to begin an official impeachment process? Can you fill us in on the discovery of that particular device to use? Can you tell me how that went about? And can you tell me currently, can you give us an update on what states have taken the ball and actually are making a move to use that rule in order to go around, circumvent the wall that is put up by the people who are currently in charge of all three branches of our government? Could you give us an update, please? I'm very, very curious as to know what the latest is on that. Thanks.
Yeah, let me try to speak briefly to all of that. You're absolutely right that the Project for a New American Century put out the plan that we are now seeing enacted. And the plan, you know, people talk about Bush being incompetent because he sounds stupid when he gives speeches. But Bush wanted to go into Iraq. He wanted to build permanent military bases. He wanted to generate huge profits for American oil companies, and he wanted to use bases in Iraq as a platform to go into Iran and Syria. This is exactly what he is doing. He did not anticipate it being this difficult. I clearly, had it gone with cakes and flowers the way they have convinced themselves it would, we would long since have been in Iran and Syria and probably Venezuela, but this is the plan, and it's still the operating procedure, and Rumsfeld isn't going anywhere. you mentioned that three branches of government, that the House and the Senate and the executive branch of government are all controlled by the Republican Party, and that's true. But impeachment is not a partisan matter. Impeachment is like any bill you would lobby for in Congress, and there is no reason that Republican members of Congress cannot put the Constitution ahead of a criminal president who belongs to their party. There were Democrats who sought to hold Lyndon Johnson accountable for his war crimes. There are Republicans running for Congress now, including in Vermont, on a platform of impeaching Bush. There is no reason that we cannot find 15 Republicans in the House with a little bit of decency. But what you really wanted to know about is what's happening in the states. And there are three states so far that have introduced in the state legislatures resolutions that would lead those legislatures to send petitions to the House of Representatives to initiate impeachment against Bush in the case of Illinois and Vermont, against both Bush and Cheney in the case of California. These are three states where, despite the lateness of the season, there is a chance of these resolutions passing. And for one thing, to go back to the party issue, because there is a Democratic majority in these states. There are other states with legislative sessions still ongoing that have strong Democratic majorities. We do expect Massachusetts any day. We expect a number of states in the coming weeks, but these have to pass. These have to get through the Rules Committee. In the case of Illinois, we need some support from some delegates from Chicago. If you live in Illinois, let me know. You know, go to afterdowningstreet.org and look on the right-hand side near the top for where it says, here's a kit to pass resolutions in your towns and cities and states, and click that and go to that page and find everything you need, including a list of all the cities and towns that have passed these resolutions and the states that have now introduced them. They have not passed Illinois, California, and Vermont, but they have been introduced. And the Jefferson Manual is a book of rules that Thomas Jefferson wrote when he was vice president and presiding over the Senate. It's not used in the Senate, it's used in the House, and it's used as a supplement to their standard rules. And it says that one of the many ways you can initiate impeachment is for a state legislature to send charges to the House. And the governor is not involved. We don't need Arnold to get it. And there are a couple of precedents for this, not involving presidents, but involving federal judges and others. In one case, the state of Florida sent impeachment charges against a federal judge, and he was impeached. So this is something that is building now, and people are very, very excited about it because it's a formal procedure, because it can force impeachment to begin, and because it gives people a sense of power and an idea of democratic accountability, because there is still the possibility with states, and especially with cities, of ordinary citizens having some influence over their representatives, where in Congress that is almost gone.
Thank you very much, David. Thank you very much. I'm still seeking a little more clarification on the implications of what you're talking about. We'll take a break. We're going to do the quiz. We have a quiz that's going to occur in the room. We're going to ask the question of the people in this room. And Mike, who is going to be the official caller of the winner? The first person that pops up with the correct answer to this question will be considered the winner. Mesta is going to be watching the screen closely to see who comes in with the correct answer first. And let's check this out. The winner of this particular giveaway on tonight's program is going to receive a DVD entitled Embedded Live. Excellent DVD. It's Tim Robbins' film. It takes a satirical look at the war in Iraq and the news media. So the first person to type the correct answer in the room to this following question, Mesta will be watching closely, And then when whoever comes in first with the correct answer, Nesta will be getting a hold of you to let you know that you were first, and then she can make the arrangements to get you this free DVD. It's excellent. Okay. And here is the question. Listen carefully. What three numbers designate the House resolution by Congressman John Conyers calling for an inquiry into the Bush administration's intent to go to war before congressional authorization, manipulation of pre-war intelligence, encouraging torture, and leading to recommendations for possible impeachment? So I'll read it one more time, faster this time. What three numbers designate the House resolution by Congressman John Conyers calling for an inquiry into the Bush administration's intent to go to war before congressional authorization, manipulation of pre-war intelligence, encouraging torture, and leading to recommendations for possible impeachment? I do see the correct answer. And we'll let Mesta make the call on that correct answer. David, when we come back from this break, what I'd like for you to address is lay out a scenario that you have worked up for the success in this impeachment movement. Tell us, if a state actually passes the resolution, is that enough? Does it take more than one? Give us a scenario on how you see it playing out successfully to where the people in this country who are sure that crimes have been committed will feel a sense of justice. So we're going to take a quick break. Then when we come back, we can address that issue. And this is a brand new public service announcement. This is from Ed Asner. He used to be on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. His favorite role to me was in Roots years and years ago, 1977, I think. This is a public service announcement from Ed Asner. And we'll be back right after this.
This is Ed Asner. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge, and tortured, targeted civilians, and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org. Okay, welcome back, everyone, to The People Speak. Our guest tonight is David Swanson. David Swanson is directly connected to a great website called AfterDowningStreet.org. Mr. Swanson is also featured recently very powerfully on a website called impeachpack.com, no spaces, no dashes, impeachpack.com, and he has been most gracious to join us this evening to share the most current information on what has now become an obvious groundswell of an impeachment movement toward the Bush administration. For various reasons, there are on the internet. You can read these resolutions. I think they have them posted on a Downing Street, after DowningStreet.org for sure. I saw them, I do believe, on the ImpeachPack.com. But we want to welcome David back into the room. And what I asked before the break about this scenario, David, what do you see? How do you see this playing out in order to look back on this in the near future and then say that we were successful in what we were trying to do? The mic's open.
Yeah, thank you. Well, you know, this is the way that you start it, is by sending these resolutions from states, by passing resolutions in hundreds of cities, by getting lots of co-sponsors on to House Resolution 635. It's 635, I assume everybody knows from the PSA now, is the right number. It's HRES, not HR, and it does make a difference because HR is something else. But House Resolution HRES 635 is a bill that would create an investigation and make recommendations on impeachment. So it's not articles of impeachment, but it's the closest thing we've got so far. Closer, articles of impeachment themselves, we would have if Illinois or California or Vermont, and Vermont is the closest, introduced third, just introduced, but with over two dozen co-sponsors already. If they send charges of impeachment to the House, that could get things started. And if the Republicans block it, or they change the rules, or we can't get a representative from Vermont to cooperate at all, which would be Bernie Sanders, you know, we have put pressure on the House. And in fact, Bernie Sanders signed on to support House Resolution 635 as the result of five towns passing resolutions for impeachment in Vermont. And in fact, some of the citizens of those towns will be coming down to Washington, D.C. Monday morning, and I'll be joining them, and we will be delivering those resolutions to the office of Speaker Dennis Hastert. And these are city resolutions. They do not have the force of a state petition, but they can get things started in the same way by putting pressure on members of the House. I mean, we at this point need to be shaming members of the House of Representatives who are not paying attention to majority opinion. Go to afterdowningstreet.org/polling. Look at the polls. We have between a third and a majority of Americans favoring impeachment. In any case, much stronger numbers than we ever had for Clinton's impeachment. And this is before we've gotten it into the media in the way that it deserves, much less the way that it was with Clinton. But again, this is not a partisan thing. This is not revenge for the Clinton nonsense. This is about defending our country from a serious, serious danger. If we do not push impeachment now, whether we think we can get it or not, we are saying take impeachment out of the Constitution or use it only for sex. And so what we accomplish if we get to an investigation is all of the truth coming out. And if we investigate Bush, we investigate Cheney. There's no way to impeach one of these guys without the other. So the fear of Cheney syndrome is really misplaced, I think, and is jumping three steps ahead of ourselves to shoot ourselves in the foot. But right now, pushing for the investigation helps us tremendously in the media and with the coming elections. We have a situation where efforts to get an investigation of any of the pre-war lies have been shot down, sometimes by one vote, in committees in the House, and where Senator Pat Roberts in the Senate is killing every attempt at a serious investigation. You know, he split the investigation in half, you know, way back years ago now. He was going to get around to investigating the misuse of intelligence by the Bush administration, and then put it off till after the election, and then after the election said, well, there's no point now. He's now proposed to cut the remaining half in half again and do some non-controversial things and put off investigating the misuse of intelligence. So as we push these issues in the media, as my buddy Ray McGovern did brilliantly this past weekend on the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer, as we push these issues of torture, detention without charge, war crimes, an illegal war, lying to Congress, spying without court approval, we drastically reduce support for the war and support for this president, who is setting records. He's at 32%. And so there is incredible evidence from polls that the best way for Democrats to win elections, and for any good candidates, Greens or Republicans, to win elections this November, is to support impeachment and censure and accountability. You know, Feingold didn't get a lot of support from anybody other than Boxer and Harkin for pushing censure, but he got $100,000 right away and a 30-point jump in approval. So this is where public passion is, and that's where you win elections. So the idea that you sometimes hear, let's have the elections first and then bring this up, is a way to lose elections and not, and then not be able to bring it up. So let's set party aside, let's push for impeachment and see where we get, and as a side effect, win some elections, and then if we can't get 15 Republicans, we won't need them, and we'll be looking at President Pelosi. But it'll take some doing to get President Pelosi to end the war. But, you know, we get past elections, we get the investigation, we get to impeachment, and then impeachment is not removal from office. Impeachment happens in the House, you then go to the Senate and have to remove from office. You know, President Clinton was impeached and not removed from office. So we get past all of those steps, and we move on to criminal prosecution, and we're really rolling. But we have to get a majority in the House. There's no way around it. But we can kickstart it, and we can push the media on it, through efforts at the city and state levels. And most Congress members obey the media quite
well. My personal point of view, as far as the necessary stage in order to end some of the frustration of Americans who are so tired of questions not being able to be asked, or questions either being obfuscated or diverted or spun into some national security black hole, the hope on my end is that we can get to the point to where we can put these people in a chair and swear them, make them swear an oath, and then ask them the questions that so many of us are so eager to ask. And hopefully we can do that soon, because personally, as far as I'm concerned, this PNAC plan that was initiated in the mid to late 90s is all laid out in front of us. They've given us their playbook. And if you look at the coincidences of the way things have been going on since they formed, it lends me to have this impending feeling that if we don't do something soon, they're going to ratchet up to another stage of their wrongdoing, and they're going to ratchet up as well already this Patriot Act mentality of oppression and if not tyranny in this country. I want to, at this point, ask the people in the room who have questions to get those questions ready. In about 7 or 8 minutes, we'll allow you to come to the microphone. Try to pose a pertinent question as briefly as comfortably possible for you. Get in the queue, put your hands up, and if you have something to ask of David Swanson, our guest here tonight, please feel free to do that. And we'll take a first-come, first-served basis as far as the questions go. Whoever has their hand up first will be first in the queue, and then after the next public service announcement, in about 7 minutes, we'll jump right into the questions after that. Just wanted to make sure that those who have questions to ask will be ready to ask those questions. Another question I have, David, is so far as this bubble, bursting this media bubble, what has happened so far in the mainstream media? Has this been presented? I did hear that Joe Scarborough threw in the I word recently, an impeachment word, in one of his panel discussions. I was just wondering, are we starting to make a dent in this massive media machinery that is doing everything it can to suppress basic people in this country from seeking, you know, pertinent truth to what's going on here? Can you fill us in? I know that I'm not real familiar with the Scarborough episode. I just read it briefly on the internet. Maybe you could share a little more with that with us and give us your outlook on what it's going to take to bring this to the forefront, to where everyday Americans can read it on the front page of their papers, can see it on the evening news and even the morning talk shows, which is by far the most non-news source that American peoples have, these morning talk shows. The mic's open.
Yeah, the public and the media have switched places. We had the media demanding Clinton's resignation and showing us Kenneth Starr going to the end of his driveway to get his newspaper every morning, saturation, O.J. Simpson coverage, and the public not buying it. You know, you couldn't get over a quarter of Americans that wanted him impeached and removed from office, or over a third that wanted him impeached. Here we have the opposite situation. We have a majority of Americans in some polls wanting impeachment, but we have a near blackout from the media, and we have not just a large percentage of Americans wanting impeachment, but wanting it passionately, putting it at the top of their list of agenda items, saying they very much want to support pro-impeachment congressional candidates, etc., which is what Impeach PAC is all about, funding those candidates. There were also dozens of polls done by the major polling companies back then with Clinton. Here, we couldn't get anybody to do polls for a long time, and so we raised money through afterdowningstreet.org/polling and went and paid polling companies to go do the polls that they wouldn't do for free, and we started generating some numbers. We now have had a few of the mainstream outlets do their own polls, and those are on that page, afterdowningstreet.org/polling, and we've had some stories in the media. We've had a good front page story in the Washington Post on impeachment. We've had a couple of good stories, the LA Times. We've had coverage on the cable shows. We've had the beginning of this seeping into the media, but it's a long ways from where it needs to be. This is sort of half of what After Downing Street, this coalition of hundreds of groups, has always been about, is forcing these issues into the media the way we did last summer with the Downing Street memo, and forcing Congress to act. And the two work together because Congress is so obedient to the media. But I think what you mentioned earlier is what we're really trying to get to, is serious hearings with subpoena power, because as soon as that happens with Congressman Conyers, who everyone is shouting about on the chat here, as soon as Congressman Conyers is the chair of the Judiciary Committee and has the power of subpoena, all hell breaks loose. You know, we've had these Democratic Party hearings. I'll be broadcasting tomorrow morning on Pacifica Radio with Verna Avery Brown from a forum, we can't call it a hearing, on the Iraq war that Congresswomen Lee and Woolsey are hosting. But we cannot have subpoena power. We cannot force those who don't want to come and testify. And as soon as that happens, it's all over. And, you know, I saw on the chat that people are excited about Patrick Fitzgerald's investigation, but it's too slow. It's too slow. We need impeach. I mean, the leaks are great and the target letters are great. We know now that Karl Rove has received a target letter. He's likely to be indicted, but it's much too slow. That people are being killed in this country and more so in Iraq every day. And we have a responsibility, if only to show citizens of other countries that the citizens of this country still have some decency, to fight for impeachment. This is not a time to calculate and become pundits and predict whether we'll get impeachment this month or not and then act. We have a duty written into the Constitution to work for impeachment. And the biggest danger that we're up against is that the next war is likely to be Iran, and that it's already started. We have troops on the ground in Iran. We have a nuclear test planned for June 2nd, and we have apparently plans to bomb Iran, possibly with nuclear weapons, before the congressional elections. This is already international crime. Threatening the use of nuclear weapons is not legal. But to do this would result in retaliation against U.S. and Israeli targets, and that would result in retaliation. We could be talking about a nuclear holocaust. And this is not a time for any halfway steps. This is a time to demand impeachment. And I know I'm talking to the choir here, but a lot of us don't realize that our choir is a majority. So we have to tell each other that and motivate each other to push for this. So, work on your city, work on your state, and work on your Congress member. We need them signed on to 635, and we need them introducing articles of impeachment.
And as I said just a minute ago, we need to do this in haste. We need to hurry because the war drums are beating again. And what's in the scope now is Iran. And Zbigniew Brzezinski, I heard that he said any attack on Iran would be an impeachable offense. And that's from one of the most blatant war hawks out there, Zbigniew Brzezinski. You could look that up on the internet and find his quotes. We're going to take about a 20 seconds. This will be a short PSA. And when we come back, we'll go to the audience questions. We have three people who are in the queue waiting to ask their questions. If you have a question to ask, please put your hand up, and we'll take the questions in turn. And I noticed that we have a person in the room, the Shaolin, has what I saw to be a very good question, but unfortunately the Shaolin does not have a microphone, so maybe we can share that question on the microphone and read it out to David and see what he thinks about that. So we're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, we'll go to the audience questions. We'll be right back.
Are you appalled that our country is spending billions on war while cutting funds for our libraries, hospitals, and schools? Are you heartsick at the suffering of the Iraqi people? Then join me, Medea Benjamin, in signing Code Pink's urgent call for peace in Iraq. Sign on today at www.womensaynotowar.org.
Okay, we're back, and let's now go to the audience questions. First on the list is Pepsi Man CR. Pepsi Man, if you would, if it's comfortable for you to do, come up to the mic, tell us your name and where you are, and then ask your question of David Swanson. Mic's open.
Hi, my name is Matt. I'm from Wichita, Kansas. David Swanson, in the past headlines, the media has been covering up a lot of different issues. For example, like the Cindy Sheehan and the Downing Street memo. What is it being done to put back in the media so people won't forget the Downing Street memo?
We've been trying ever since last May 1st when the thing came out to get it proper attention in the media. And what happened the end of May, beginning of June last year was absolutely phenomenal. It was the first time that the public and the blogosphere had forced something down the throat of the media that it was adamantly opposed to. The Washington Post wrote an editorial saying, "We will not cover the Downing Street memo," and a week later had it on their front page because of the sheer volume and force of emails and phone calls and faxes and protests in their lobby and on the street in front of their building. And we reenacted the Downing Street meeting in front of television studios and newspapers. We overwhelmed them. And it wasn't, it wasn't because of the brilliance of our organizing at After Downing Street and at other organizations that helped out. It was because people were so energized around the country about it. And since then, there's been two or three dozen major smoking guns pointing to the same crimes, to the decision to go to war, to the decision to lie about it, to the decision to play the UN as an instrument of war, to the beginning of the war before even talking to Congress. And these have not inspired the same enthusiasm. There's this sort of fatigue of smoking guns now, and people want to know, what the heck are we going to do about it? And the same goes for the media. The media will not pick up these issues of its own accord as a general rule. There's been some good stories scattered here and there, but then they're not replayed over and over again. They come and go, these groundbreaking stories in the Times or the Post, but then they're there for a day and then gone. And we don't, in recent months, have the public energy to force the situation to be otherwise, except around impeachment and censure and accountability. And it's by forcing those into the media that we can force the reasons for the impeachment into the media. And Cindy is one of the best at doing this, and she brings up the Downing Street memo time and time again. As she did from before last August when she went to Crawford, and She will be with me tomorrow morning, 8:30 Eastern Time on Pacifica Radio. We will be talking from a hearing room on Capitol Hill prior to a forum on getting out of Iraq that's being hosted by Lynn Woolsey, Barbara Lee, Maurice Hinchey, and Maxine Waters, and Jim McGovern. So, call in. Well, I don't think they'll have call in and questions like this, this show, but listen and see if you can call in and keep in touch with me and Cindy. She is our best spokesperson right now.
Well, thank you, David. David, we have a question now from a friend in the room who does not have microphone capability. This is the person next in line, the Shaolin. So what I'll do is I'll propose the question that was sent to me, and you can see what you think about this. I found it a very interesting question. The question was, the Shaolin says that Sean Finsel of Rainbow's M Talk Radio has said, and I quote, "Is there a possibility that we can appeal to the world court? In other words, is there a similar provision in the UN Charter to the Jefferson Rule?" And that's from the Shaolin. That's a good question, Shaolin. Mic's open.
Well, you know, the United Nations did not sanction this war, and so if you're looking at to the UN, the war is illegal, and the Secretary General has said so. The International Criminal Court is something that the United States intentionally has avoided recognizing, as St. Paul just posted. That does not completely eliminate the possibility of holding Bush or Cheney or Rumsfeld or Rice accountable. It puts them in the situation that Henry Kissinger is in, where he has to be careful where he travels. And the precedent is Pinochet. Pinochet was detained in the UK by a charge from a Spanish court for violations of international law, for crimes against humanity committed years ago when he was the president in Chile. And so there is a very, very strong precedent in the Pinochet example, and you know, in the years, the 5 or 10 years just before the Bush administration hit the world like a ton of bricks, international law was on the rise. International accountability was on the upswing, and like we had never seen since the post-Nazi years when it was really created. We need to make the post-Bush Cheney years like the post-Nazi years. We need to recreate and strengthen international law, because this war, if no one is held accountable for it in any way, pretty much eliminates international law outside of corporate trade law.
Well, thank you, David. I'm wishing that the Shaolin had a microphone, because it seems to be putting in the room several ideas that are new to me. Hopefully, at some point, we can rectify that and get the Shaolin up on the mic, because I'm very curious to hear this person. Obviously, they seem to be in the know pretty well. The next person on the list, and there's no one underneath Franny, as a matter of fact. Franny 82 is ready to ask a question. And Franny, if you want to, you can tell us your name and where you are, and then go ahead with your question for David Swanson. Mic's open. Hey, Franny, I think you should be, I think you might have been locked there for a minute. You should be free to take the mic now. Give it a shot with your question for David Swanson. Mic's open.
Okay, finally. I was wondering if maybe you had forgot to undock me. My name is Fran, and I'm from British Columbia, Canada. I'm sure you'll agree that Canada has a very close international relationship with the U.S., as well as being a close physical proximity. And it is because of that physical proximity and blending of the rest of the world's opinion of what Canada represents and whether we actually are separate from the U.S. or not, that I pose my question. So I'll read the question. I tried to post it, but it was too long, so I'll just read it. It appears that from the information coming from Ottawa these days that the new Canadian Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, is set to become another Tony Blair. If this happens and Canada is foolish enough to go along with a war in Iran that will put the whole of North America at war with Islam, do you think this puts the USA and Canada at greater risk for countries like China, Russia, North Korea, Pakistan, and other non-capitalist countries that were communists, perhaps even for a nuclear holocaust? I'll stand down.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is not being alarmist. This nation that we are in, the United States, is in gross violation of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, unlike Iran. We have nuclear weapons, unlike Iran and Iraq. We have enough to eliminate the nation of Iran from the face of the earth many times over. We have plans to test a major new nuclear weapon in June in Nevada in order to use it in Iran. It will have tremendous impact across the Middle East and into Pakistan and India. We will be poisoning people for hundreds of miles around any explosion, and there will be repercussions. The most mild of which will be that Iran will immediately take its nuclear program underground, and it will be impossible to negotiate or to inspect or to control that program in the future. But more seriously, there is no question that Iran will retaliate against U.S. targets and possibly against Israel. And there is no question that the U.S. will retaliate to that. And this is how world wars have begun in our experience of two world wars thus far. This is the danger. This is the major, major threat. You know, this is the Cuban Missile Crisis with the more crazy of the leaders on our side, and openly so. And this could be all she wrote. This is a very, very, very serious danger. I just want to mention that when I used to live in Europe years ago, all you had to say was, "I'm an American," to be everybody's friend and hero and idol. Now I say I'm Canadian, and I'm not. But, you know, Neil Young for president, this guy is releasing a song on Friday of this week called "Let's Impeach the President," and this is a great song.
Oh, yes, indeed. Neil Young there is an interview on CNN's Entertainment Tonight. It's on the Internet. I think you can go to crooksandliars.com, and it'll point you in that direction, the brief interview with Neil Young about his latest record. And, of course, the shill reporter asked the pointed question about whether or not he was only doing it for taking advantage of the current situation to make money. And we all know how Neil Young is. There's no way. Blues 2 has her hand up, and if you would, come up, tell us your name, where you are, and give us your question for David Swanson. Mic's open.
Okay, my name is Leanne, and I'm from California. I have a very simple question to you, sir. What has taken so long? Why has this taken all these years into this guy's second term and all the damage that has been done? And I thank you. I yield the mic.
Well, if the question is how he managed to get elected and to do so twice, I don't believe he did either time. But that simply leads to the further question of why we have stood for it, why we have not shut this country down, why we have not turned out in protest, in national strike, and closed down industries and shut down recruiting stations and blocked congressional offices and surrounded the White House and ended this thing the way people have done in other countries. And, you know, you can't put all of the blame on the media, but there is a lot more activity and protest and civil disobedience and activism going on than we are told about, which, of course, discourages more of it because people don't know that it's happening. People don't know there are grandmothers going to recruiting stations trying to get themselves recruited instead of their grandkids. People don't know that that Cindy Sheehan and others are engaging in civil disobedience on a weekly basis from Texas to New York to D.C. and you'll be hearing about something in the next day or two. There is a lot of effort being made, but it's not where it needs to be. And you can look back to Vietnam, where we did not have the sort of public opinion against the war, and did not have public opinion against the war at all so quickly, but we had far more activism. And you can look at the fact that there was a draft. You can look at the fact that it was easier to get into universities if you were not rich, and people who are not rich and privileged are better at organizing. But the fact is that we have not seen this as urgent. We don't see the bodies. We don't see, and this is a problem in Canada now too. You're not allowed to see the dead bodies come home, and yet don't see the bodies and the limbs and the insides torn apart in Iraq. We don't know, and so we have these myths created that are able to penetrate our psyches and have a life because of that vast ignorance. And so you have this idea that, well, we went in, now we have to stay in. And you have Senator Levin and Reid and Collins threatening the Iraqis to pull out if they don't get their act together. You know, 82% of them want us out. That's a heck of a threat. For a little slacking off, they get a nice reward. But, you know, that's only possible because the American public has no idea that the Iraqis want us out, that we are committing crimes, that we are torturing, that we are assassinating, that there is nothing so vile that we are not engaged in it, which has eliminated our moral authority to denounce or oppose anything.
Well, David, we can only hope that this apparent groundswell takes flight. Let's hope that the power of the people in the individual states who are tired of the lies can organize in a proper fashion to bring this about, to bring this impeachment about. And at this point in time, I want to express my great thanks to you for coming into this room and sharing your ideas with us and fielding our questions. It's been very informative, and we would love to, once we're working on our mechanism of producing this program, hopefully you can come back. You have an open invitation. I'm sure Mike will agree that any time. And people in the room, since David is a PowTalk participant, let's put a thumbs up in there, show our appreciation for his visit this evening, and keep an open invitation to David Swanson so that he can come back anytime he wants to, anytime you want to, David. At this point in time, we're going to go ahead and draw the curtain to a close. We have Ani DeFranco, who is going to sing us a one-minute little tribute, talking about the fact that this land is ours. We need to keep that in mind. Never forget that. Never forget that. Want to thank everyone for their participation this evening. You can join us weekly here on PowTalk every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. We're working at our darndest to get quality guests in here like David Swanson to get this movement up and going in full force so we can take our country back and establish a more peaceful world. So now let's go over to Ani. She's going to sing us the good night to everybody. And once again, I want to thank everyone for coming. And we'll see you next week, 8 o'clock Wednesdays, for The People Speak. Bye for now, everyone.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the city wall, by the rolling waters, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry when I stood there wondering how this land was made for you and me. California to New York and Redwood Forest, the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.